people to hire under. We're not under the hiring freeze for those positions, so we're trying to bring people in. But to blame this and simply use this event to blame it on cuts and blame it on what's happening right now with the VA is frankly not fair to the American people, and it's not fair to veterans who are hearing this thinking that something else is going on. This may be this person's perspective. I respect their position, but their position does not reflect what we've actually done.
How would a veteran like that be able to flag that concern and have it addressed in this new administration?
Well, they can go, you know, if they're having issues, they can talk to the people at the VA. They can talk to their schedulers. They can actually, again, as always happens here, and it's one of the things we got to get away from, if they're having problems with scheduling or scheduling's not happening, we have some issues in third-party scheduling or however they're trying to get their schedule made, is, look, reach out to your veterans service organization. Reach out to the our veteran crisis line. Talk to the people. Don't just simply sit there and think that you're by yourself. We have multitudes of resources to reach out to find out what's going on and to find out what's really happening. My concern is, though, is that people are being led or mistold things that are not actually affecting their specific care, and they're then trying to broaden it out to a more open attack on what they maybe positions that they don't understand or don't like.
Secretary Collins, we are out of time, but we invite you back anytime to continue this conversation. Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Doug Collins. Thank you.
Take care.
That was the Secretary of the Veterans Administration on the PBS NewsHour in this past week. Next, we have Native Land Podcasting. And guess what happened at the State of the Union?
Angela, you brought up the honorable representative from the great state of Texas, Al Green, I believe. I don't know his district number, but from the great state of Texas, who took up the armor of resilience, stood up to tell a fascist who thinks he's a king that no kings live here and he has no mandate. And y'all, let's take a look at what happened as a result of.
And it's the 9th district while we wait for that clip to roll.
Likewise, small business optimism saw its single largest one-month gain ever recorded, a 41-point jump.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning. Members are engaging in willful and continuing breach of decorum, and the chair is prepared to direct the sergeant-at-arms to restore order to the joint session. Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir. Take your seat. Continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum. The chair now directs the sergeant at arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber. Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House.
That hurts me. I think that's probably why I wanted to see it stopped, because I kept having flashes of the bullies in the schoolhouse doorway. And I'm really angry at that clip because I averted my eyes from it before in real time because of the tepid shyness, cowardice of the Democrats sitting next to him, around him, behind him, along his walk, as he is heckled by his other side colleagues in the U.S. House of Representatives. J.D. Vance, ugh, and his small man bullying disposition and attitude, right? We know that guy from high school. We know him from middle school. We play with him in the schoolyard. We know that character. He is eminently weak, right? Attempting to play like he's got strength. I'm mad about that clip because had I been orchestrating a genuine, authentic moment of resistance, he would have exited that chamber locked arms with the other 200 plus members of the other side of that house who call themselves the opposition. Instead, he was escorted alone in his full power and strength. I respect it. But shame.
Shame. You know, just it's a lot of seriousness happening. And I just want to offer a brief moment of levity because I don't think he would mind me sharing this. But our good friend Michael Harriet texted us last night and said, man, if I get thrown out the club and y'all stayed behind, it's like, yes. Precisely. I was honestly disgusted watching what happened last night with the Democrats. But I wasn't just disgusted with what happened with the Democrats because, like I said, I'm not a party person. I was disgusted with what happened across media because the media displayed to you nothing, really. You know, they treated this entire address like it was normal. They had, you know, Trump people say this thing and somebody else, you know, the opposition say this, and they were engaged in debate when the reality is there were people who walked out. There were members of Congress who left that chamber. There was a movement of resistance. It's just that for whatever reason, across the board, the media has capitulated. I would imagine had our sister Joy Reid still had her show, had she been a part of the coverage, that you would have seen that resistance in real time. She would have referenced, just FYI, there are people exiting the chamber in real time, which is why journalism matters, which is why actual reporting matters. So I just,
what if you get your wish?
I get my wish. Oh yes, because we have, yes. We have a clip of Joy. Yeah. Well, let's roll that clip.
Well, wow. No, not of Joy, but of the real time.
Well, let's play that,
which is what you're calling. Yes.
And when we come back from this, I want to reference the censure that's been dropped, introduced on the House.
Of course,
we cannot normalize this. This man has no respect for Congress. He does not respect us as a co-equal branch of government. He has contempt for the American people. He pardoned January Sixers, who desecrated the very well that we are in today for this joint address of Congress or State of the Union. So I don't need to be there for a MAGA pep rally, listening to lies and propaganda, hateful rhetoric, and even more hateful and harmful policies. If he has contempt for the American people, I'm going to stand in solidarity with the American people. And that is why I walked out in protest at 9:40. These boots were definitely made for walking. And again, I wanted to bring visibility to the story of the federal worker from my district who was fired unlawfully, unjustly. And it not only is disrupting her life and livelihood, but it's a disservice to the people that she serves every day.
Here was the general consensus is that, number one, this isn't a normal address. This isn't a normal time where you stand up when the president walks in, where you have that kind of decorum. Because, number one, he's never shown that to us or the American people or any people. He's never shown that to Black people. And so we walked in there, many of us, with a plan of what to do. If you've seen the videos, you've seen people with signs, holding up signs. I hold up a sign that said Musk steals. Elon Musk has been tweeting at me every other week. If I was the richest man on earth, I wouldn't be tweeting at 28-year-old Maxwell Frost, but I'd be doing other things. But I think there's power in occupying a space and choosing yourself when to get up and leave and walk out in the spirit of student protesters from the civil rights era. And that's why we decided to do it, us and a group of mainly women from the Black Caucus who helped lead us into that action.
You know me very well, and you know that I was not about to put up with that bullshit that he was going to talk about tonight. Angela, you know, you've been out there in Los Angeles. I've worked with gang members, the Crips, the Bloods, everybody. I've never encountered anybody like Trump. Trump is a person without a conscience. He will lie at the drop of a hat, and he knows that you know that he's lying, but he continues to lie.
Max is an OG, just like Al Green. I follow their lead. I thank God for them. I really do, especially in this time. You know, as one of the younger members in the Congress, it is so important to have people that are always going to give us a sobering message about the moment that we're in. And as y'all just heard, she did not hold back. She gonna call that what he is at all times. And I'm here for it. And what y'all don't know is we both from St. Louis. Listen, we from the show me state, okay? This is what you get out of St. Louis.
To all of you on this line, I want to say I needed to get on here to be refueled. Mm-hmm. And I think in this moment, it is going to require each of us to recognize what can I do in this moment. And so I just want to thank to the collective, to everybody who helped us get to this place. Now the real work begins. And as was said, they're using words like scrub, to scrub our history, to scrub us out of jobs. Even veterans who are one third of the workforce, they don't care.
What I think is so powerful, and again, you guys can call me on my bias here, but I got to tell you, what's so powerful to me about this is there are a lot of folks who Jasmine leads. Jasmine is my leader, okay?
Yes.
But Jasmine got her leadership from watching folks like Maxine Waters not stand for nothing, not take no ish, like, and she was so clear about it yesterday. I just love that moment between the two of them. It was longer than that. I hope folks get to go back and watch, but it was incredible to see them. The thing that I want to point out too, as we talk about Mr. Green, you guys were mentioning that you felt like it was cowardice on behalf of the other members that let him get walked out. They actually really had a robust strategy. Maxwell goes into all of the considerations that at play when he addressed the state of the people in the Black Leadership Summit. They talked about whether or not to go, because if they didn't go at the beginning, white staffers would fill their seats. They talked about the importance of him having to face Black people. Even when you hear Lisa Blunt Rochester, which I know will be played in this show, all of the rationale that went into that. What I think is important is that there are some people that did something different, because now Dan Newhouse, who is a representative from my home state in Washington, has taken it upon himself to introduce a censure resolution against Congressman Green. What it means to be censured in the House chamber, the walk of shame that Mr. Green should not have walked yesterday, that should have been Donald Trump's walk of shame, because he was lying to the American people for over an hour. But he instead had to be escorted out by law enforcement, two people who look like him, in fact, but mostly white sergeant at arms officials, walked out of the chamber, has to be censured in the well of the Congress. What it means to be censured, and this is it's in the Constitution, is that the member of Congress has to stand before the body and be reprimanded for taking an action that is contrary to the House rules. So, and it could be something else. It could be a crime. There have been 27 members of Congress censured in history. Al Green would be censured, and you guys know who wouldn't be? Because they expect this vote to pass tomorrow when it comes up on the House floor. You know who wasn't censured? Joe Wilson. Standing up before the American people, before Barack Obama's State of the Union address, addressing Obamacare, addressing the Affordable Care Act, he points to Barack Obama and yells, "You lie." Joe Wilson was merely reprimanded. Congressman Green should not be reprimanded, censured, or expelled for telling the American people the truth.
What if he refuses?
$800 billion in Medicaid that is going to be cut under this administration. That's what he's pointing out. If he refuses, I suspect that this will be escalated and they will want to expel him from the House of Representatives.
He definitely said in the post comments that I'll take whatever the reprimand is, because the harm that's coming toward people, the people I care about with this Medicaid cut, they're worth it. By and large, is what he said. My embarrassment was, if you looked at the frame of the Democrats who were seated next to him and around him, nearly every one of them averted their eyes, never looked at the congressman. They looked down. They looked around. They looked up at the speaker's rostrum. They did not look at their colleague who was being escorted, forcibly removed, because it wasn't by choice, from the chamber for stating a fact. I get decorum, but I'm just saying, the best laid plans of protests, I understand it, but sometimes a movement so big happens, so cataclysmic, it shadows everything else around it. And in those movements, it's go time.
Yeah,
that's what I meant.
And I appreciate what
happened with those other members. Totally appreciate it with the other members who we've just showcased on this forum did by way of active protest. I think by and large, the Democrats need a family meeting.
Yeah.
And they need to decide if they are serious about what it means to be the opposition party, because disparate, disconnected forms of resistance or counter, quite frankly, don't break through to illuminate for the American people that there is a strong enough fist coming together to punch back.
I don't know if a family meeting is the thing, honestly, because when you...
I mean amongst them.
No, I know what you mean. That's what I'm saying, amongst them. I don't know if that's the thing, because them ain't us. And I feel like even if you put the entire party in a room, when you have Congresswoman Slotkin given the response, who has been an opponent of DEI, who has not been supportive of progressive policies that support people of color, it sends a message. And so I don't know if you put, you know, this quote unquote big tent party in one room, because the message I'm getting from them is, look, we tried to mess around with y'all black folks. We tried to mess around with the LGBTQ community, and that didn't work for us. So we're going to go back and try to convince these white folks, who we have not gotten since Lyndon Johnson, since 1965. We're going to go back and try to appeal to them and try to seduce them to this party. And they keep getting the wrong message. So I don't know that a family meeting matters. I don't know that holding up paddles in the air matter. I think if I'm a person who's being crushed by the weight of a MAGA fascist system, I don't give a damn about your paddles. And then even I legit did not know what is the consequence for refusing censure. But I'm looking at the people who were expelled from Congress in recent history. There's been other people, but in recent history, we're talking about James Traficant. I'm old enough to remember. I was at CNN at the time. James Traficant was expelled. He was tricky. Okay. He was, yeah.
Tricky.
Like convicted of bribery, conspiracy. And then the other person is this clown, George Santos. George Santos is a Republican. And if you all can Google him, but
he's
almost just lied about
everything. As the president, but the president somehow can command the attention of the entire Congress and do a joint address and not have to be censured, expelled, removed, impeached. Nothing. I'm clear about the contrast. But to Andrew's point, the family meeting is to let people know what time it is. There were more than 20 members of the Congressional Black Caucus that were with State of the People yesterday. They know what time it is. They got to go deliver the message to these white members, including Senator Slotkin, who you referenced, Tiff. If they want to go be Dixiecrats, we ain't about to be part of this. That has to be the message. Sorry. It's okay.
I want the people to know she's a senator, thank you.
My hope is
maybe she need to be demoted
too. 20 members.
Honey, can we do that? Because Lord have mercy.
My hope is that those 20 members will be the tip of the spear for the kind of about face that is required. Your protest cannot be calibrated to what is acceptable to the opposition. Your protest must be calibrated to the scale of the threat that you are confronting. I'm not mad. I understand people are feeling and reaching into the darkness, trying to find what is the best way in which to do this thing. This is a time to check in with your conscience, your heart, your backbone, and your people, the ones that elected you there to represent them. That ought to dictate then what it is that you do. But this right now, right here, is not going to get it. It ain't going to get it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I just want us to be clear. Like, you guys, I want to say on this show, Congressman Al Green, you are a champion. You are a hero. Yeah. I've been mad at you waving that cane. I'm so glad you waved that cane yesterday. Like, it was a necessary prop. Especially when the props that have been making their way around the White House are things like Reverend Jamal Harrison Bryant's head, right? Like, you waving that cane to save Medicaid, you the people's champ, and the people need to recognize it. Your bravery is noted, your courage is seen, and I know that you're having to balance this with the loss of your friend, Congressman Sylvester Turner, who is also the mayor of Houston. Of course, he just passed away hours after the State of the Union address yesterday. He's not been in Congress but since January. So there's a lot that people are having to balance: their personal lives, their what's happening nationally, what's happening internationally. And what we know is that this moment requires all of us to do something different. If it's abnormal, then we've got to use abnormal strength. We've got to find abnormal energy. We got to create abnormal coalitions. We got to relieve ourselves of abnormal grudges. We've got work to do, and it's going to require all of our hands.
And now, for a moment of clarity. Well, that was rich. This whole evening was just filled with a lot of stuff. Elise, I want to start with you on an aspect of this, which I thought was, how should we put it, rich. It was a rich moment for me when Trump talked about an unelected bureaucracy. Mm. Let's take a quick listen to that, please.
We have hundreds of thousands of federal workers who have not been showing up to work. My administration will reclaim power from this unaccountable bureaucracy, and we will restore true democracy to America again. And any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over.
So there were two aspects of that that I thought were rich. One, the bobbleheads behind the president voted for those bureaucrats in that bureaucracy that they're now sitting there watching be deconstructed with broad smiles on their face. Second, the most obvious unelected bureaucrat at the center of all of this is Elon Musk. And I think for me, at least, as I hope for a lot of Americans, they're beginning to see now just how dangerous this proposition could be. What was your take in contextualizing that moment against the backdrop of this evening?
It is interesting to me how Elon Musk has done a pretty good job of making Donald Trump still feel relatively unthreatened. Why would you give Elon Musk a prime seat at your State of the Union to highlight that he has a front and centered role as an unelected bureaucrat?
The thing about the moment for me that, and if for folks, if you really want to understand the difference between Republican control and Democratic acquiescence, it's in how two things happened in that chamber and how they were handled. When Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert stood up and showed their behinds on the House floor, all right, when they just act a fool, shouting and talking and being loud and disruptive, what happened?
They stayed.
Democrats didn't threaten them. Democrats didn't tell them to sit your behind down and shut up. Right? Order in the House.
What happened tonight?
What happened then is what happened tonight. Because the Republicans weren't coming to play. They weren't going to give the Democrats the quarter. They knew what they were going to do. They knew they were going to try to be disruptive in some form. And their goal was to shut it down in one of two ways. And both of them worked. USA, USA, as if they own that, you know, that moniker. And throw them out.
I guess what should have the Democrats done instead of
throwing them
did?
Out?
No, I'm talking about tonight. Should the Democrats have done tonight
Some of us believe they shouldn't have shown up. Or if they showed up at a certain point, here's the deal. When the congressman was kicked out, half that room should have left with him. Because that was the point. He was the only one to stand up and say, I'm not going to sit here and let you lie in this chamber. I'm not going to let you get away with this because you're lying right now. And instead of calling the man a lie, like they did to Barack Obama.
Right. I remember I was there.
Right?
And nothing happened.
And what happened then?
He got a pat on the wrist after.
I think that's what happened tonight.
I thought she did a fantastic job. I thought that she kept it short also, which is such an advantage that so many politicians just underestimate. Mm-hmm. People are going to actually pay attention to the substance of what she said. She was very clear, plain, eloquent. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any drama. She didn't need to add any drama to what she was saying because the reality is already there. She was telling the truth, but it came across in just a very simple, straightforward way that I think more Democrats could be smart to emulate.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I thought she did a very good job because that's a very tough thing to do to follow any president.
Killed many a career.
Yes. Killed many a career. She didn't need a drink of water.
I know, right? I was about to say.
But I think the Slotkin piece tonight, if they're really creative folks inside the bubble with the Democrats right now, to juxtapose pieces, if I'm doing an ad tomorrow, which mm-hmm. I would be doing right now if I'm the DNC chair, I would have my folks put up an ad tomorrow to play in some key areas, pieces from Trump's speech with Slotkin's response, and begin to set the narrative, mm-hmm. the narrative contrast, because the fight for the House began tonight, folks.
Well, it started 3 months ago.
No, but it actually began in earnest tonight politically. I think a lot of folks now, particularly given what you've already described as the energy, the angst inside the Democratic Party for what some would argue is the failure to seize the moment by a proactive action, mm-hmm. right? I think they can begin now to take some steps to sort of reframe this conversation for the country that I think is ready for that reframing,
yeah.
given everything that's been happening, what we're seeing happening in red states and town hall meetings, what we're seeing happen with members now, the Republicans being told, hey, no more town hall meetings, y'all, right?
Don't actually talk to the people who put you in office and that you serve and who pay your salary. Nope. Be a coward.
Be a coward. I love it.
Are you going to literally tell these people whose people in their district are saying, I want you to fight for me? There's sound from a town hall where someone stood up and said, please, just we'll be with you. Just do something.
Well, I know a thing or two about steely spines. So
yes, we know.
I really appreciate that.
I did that for you.
Thank you very much. I really do appreciate that. But there's a lot of value in what you're saying, Simone, because you're right. It's not going to get solved in a television ad. It's not going to get solved in anything you send across the transom on people's phones. It's a combination of a lot of things that have to come together, and at the core of that is action. Mm. And this in this age where you see at least one party doing and taking all kinds of actions, right? Whether you like them or not, there's activity. And what it's doing, if you've noticed, is it's emboldening the Republicans in a way in which dissent becomes much more difficult. The tighter, the more active, the harder it is. You don't have that right now on the Democratic side in a way that I thought maybe they could have begun to do that tonight. Let them, to your point, let the members express themselves. Smack them on the hand tomorrow morning, but create that link of that moment of action for them so they can begin to see, okay, yeah, now we can coalesce around and yeah, we'll take the hit on the hand and the public may or may not like everything that we did, but at least they know one thing about us. We're ready to fight.
You know who's giving to Democrats tonight? People that support Al Green. His coffers are being filled because they're like, that's a member that's fighting for me. And I'm like, baby, you live in Nebraska. Al Green is actually not your representative.
and just sending them all the money.
Okay.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
Do you know a veteran in need? After leaving the military, many veterans struggle to find their way home. Because to a veteran, home isn't just a place, it's an idea, a feeling. Nation's Finest understands the challenges veterans face. Through the VA's Supportive Services for Veteran Families program, we help veterans and their families struggling with rent, employment, and other housing-related costs. To Today, Nation's Finest operates more than 30 locations in California, Arizona, and Nevada. For more than 50 years, we've helped thousands of veterans in these communities build happy, healthy, and purposeful lives. And our team is committed to supporting those who've served and their families for another 50. To get help, visit nationsfinest.org or call 1-833-468-9676. That's 1-833-468-9676.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself. Surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
We can secure our world. Watch out for offers too good to be true. That's phishing. Someone's trying to take advantage of you.
Learn how to recognize and report phishing at cisa.gov/secure-our-world.
WRCT Pittsburgh. WRCT.org.
You are listening to The Sound of Language on WRCT Pittsburgh, produced by the students in Contextual Practice Seminar. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in the show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily express those of WRCT Pittsburgh or its members.
All right, so today our guest is Simona Körner. I was going to ask you to teach me how to pronounce your name correctly.
You might have pretty well.
Okay. So we met on the first day of grad school, and we became fast friends. And I wanted to invite Simona because we met up this past weekend in Princeton at a conference called Fantasies of the People. And Nick was also there. And because of that opportunity of you coming to this country, Simona and Nick came from Germany. I thought it would be really nice to be able to spend some time together and then for Simona to be able to share their performance practice and the work they've been doing recently with field recordings with you all. One of the things that I feel really connected with you about with your practice is how research-based it is. And with research, it expands beyond reading, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of research that is about connecting with people. It's very embodied. And in your performance work, you talk about this, right? And you enact it. And I wanted you to come and be able to share that.
Yes, thank you for inviting me. So interesting because maybe I just... We already talked about that in the car a bit, that I have the feeling I was, like, so in a kind of way anxious to come here and talk about my practice because so much changed in the last weeks, like, politically. Mm-hmm. And not just because of, like, telling... or speaking out mm-hmm. about political things, but also because I have the feeling my artistic practice needs to necessarily change through that, or I have to like regain it, and like it's like broken apart in pieces, and now I have to like somehow pick them up again and see how to deal with them or with the forms which are somehow not so applicable anymore. At some points, I mean, at other points, yes. But so I'm really curious about speaking with you today, and also a bit like loaded. That's yeah. what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
So maybe I brought some materials. Yeah. Like I thought it would be nice because I see my artistic practice very much implicated in like the practice of many others in your practice. That's why. Why we maybe found us the first day, but also like historically embedded like in a network at some point. I brought like a recording of Louis Shudesukai, from whom you maybe already heard, like the presentation, the video, I don't know. I shared a text, mm-hmm. a video of Louis, who was a scholar at my, like, who was a visiting artist scholar at my university in Nuremberg, ADBK Nuremberg, and from whom I learned like a lot about sound and perception. And I found it interesting already in our entering round now, like that it's even not so clear what to talk about when we talk about sound, that it like so fast goes to music, that it mm-hmm. somehow draws back to the self. You came with recording techniques, and this somehow already reveals so much about the horizon one grew up in without even talking about identity. Mm-hmm. You don't need to talk about mm-hmm. where one specifically comes from. And it tells a lot about class, gender, implicatedness when you talk about how you listen or how you sound and how you perceive this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Louis, I brought two texts. One by Nisha Ramaya, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Maybe you
Nisha
can
help. Ramaya.
Which is one of my favorite poets at the moment, who writes in this book, which is called States of the Body Produced by Love, through reoriginating herself again and again in different forms of narration and through the Sanskrit language as a very sounding language, as language which takes like sound in itself very serious, or like which is implicated much more than like in European or Western languages, where you do not think a lot about like how a word is like in and of itself perceived through its sound. And here we have like a language which I cannot speak, but which she tries to mediate through, which she taught she herself through reading a colonial book about it, like a colonial lexicon, and she tries to deal with that abstraction of her own life, with that violence, her relation to gain that language as a sound mm-hmm. practice. And I
also like
sure, please, you can watch through everything of this. I brought Simone Weil, The Iliad or the Poem of Force. These two things will also be very present in the text I read, and maybe it's a good, like, giving a short introduction to it is a good thing, because it's like, then you maybe can deal better with a very abstract text I wrote. Simone Weil was an organized anti-fascist and Christian mystic, which is like a crazy combination, in like during the Nazi regime in France. And she was like, this text she wrote in 1940, and shortly after the fall of France. So it's really directly connecting with fascism, with the Nazi regime. And she's looking at the Iliad as like the Greece Urmythos, like as the epic, also as one Urmythos of like our lives. And she goes through Force as like actually the hero or the main protagonist, instead of like Iliad or Homer or whoever is in all this history embedded. And she really tries to make clear how Force operates on our lives, and like through a very layered history. And I thought this is like also connecting to sound a lot, because we with sound we deal like with energy and with like matter moving, stuff like that. Yeah. I brought some stuff from different places, from which also the sounds I will share with you, field recordings, originated, so that you maybe also have like a bit of a material relation to the places. This is like from my forest at the hinterland. I don't know if we burn it, because it's, but you can like give it around and smell a bit at it.
What is it?
It's the resin from a tree. From,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Fichte. Sorry, my English, I don't know. Yeah. And I also brought like two microphones, which a partner of mine, like collaborator, very close friend partner, developed, which are electromagnetic microphones with which I did also record a lot and with which we can play a bit, like listening to our smartphones, for example, to a bit gain a feeling of different recording techniques and how actually these recording techniques can guide us through space, for example, and make like our perception can be like a technological perception of our body, and guide us in moving through space differently, for example. Yeah, and these are like two things with which you can play them like an instrument, because they're just basically magnets embedded in them.
So one thought we had was to play some of this recording. Yeah. So Simona brought this album, which is from Louis Chude, Soke, and it's the...
Between music and environment was blurred, especially given that audience responses were expected and incorporated into the soundscape along with a native obsession with echoing reverb. These effects would begin to define the music, particularly that subgenre of reggae that would become central to my listening, my writing, my research, and my recording. This obsession with echo and reverb clearly spoke to some cultural need. There was something there about the joys of exploring technology via sound, but also about redefining and claiming space, something about self-expansion and duplication. Echo suggested so much about space and the manipulation of sound and memory and, of course, sounds. It was because of this shared obsession that I eventually named my overall recording and sonic project Echo the Future, the language of space.
The sounds are like from recordings on ground,
right? Okay.
And I don't know if Louis has spoken in the words on ground. I can imagine it would make sense, but I don't know that.
Right. Okay.
Like the other side of the LP is really like I think then the singular artists and what they have done. For example, a Kurdish person has been there, who has been voicing in the place. Very much, and I think it's really according to you can really see that these sound practices differ from different like cultural needs. Also how these persons, it made sense that this Kurdish person engages with voice in that space, for example, others with like a synthesizer. Yeah, I mean, it's also interesting, I don't know, like how much you already talked about the history of recording techniques, for example, but that like one of the first uses before like there was radio as a transmitting system, and like shortly after the microphone was invented, like one of the first things was in Europe to put like telephone lines from the theaters to households. So first it was just the king, but King Louis, I think it was like, yeah, Son and Queen. And then it was like a thing that it went into many private households, and you could like have an abonnement, pay like 2-3 euros or whatever, to be able to have like a direct connection to the theater. So live transmitting was one of the first questions that immediately arrived with like having microphones on a larger scale
for listening to the film, just the audio of the film.
Just the audio of the theater play, even before film, you know. And one of the interesting effects has been that the audience is like as loudly transmitted as as the theater, because these microphones were not very sensitive. So this must have been like, there are written things about the experience of listeners of that time who also enjoyed that a lot, actually. Because also theater rooms haven't been as silent as ours right now. That came just with Wagner, this audience relation that you should be silent in a theater.
Did the sound come?
People would also gather for doing this together. Like when one person had this telephone, like there are like a lot of pictures.
Pass it around.
And it's like a very female thing also. That they would gather as like 5 to 10 persons and sit there on their couches. I mean, obviously, Bildungsbürgertum, like bourgeois, but
ladies of leisure.
Yeah, exactly. To be on track, what's the new theater piece without going there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm interested in like knowing, you were earlier talking about how sound recording was a part of colonial regimes. Mm. I wonder how, like, video and image and documentation for sure, painting, all of that, but sound recording, in what ways do you think?
Mm-hmm.
Is that super interesting to hear?
So I also know it just from Louis, so I'm I can just voice recording, actually. Voice and ritual recording was a lot of like ritual music, rhythm recording. It was just like the producing the colonial archive on a large scale. I think this went through all media which have been invented at that time. And Louis also said, like, when he was there, that it was always like when Black people started to use, for example, recording techniques, especially with their voice, there was like a huge fear around that, because it was always about the fear of the object striking back, like the colonial subject, which was the object, striking back, and that there's this relation in language that as soon as like colonized people have reached in the colonial frame some state of personhood, white people would try to claim the same state of personhood for a technology, which is insane, because the object relation always changes when the slave or the colonized tries to get out of it. It's crazy, how our language shapes around technology, and also how we talk about AI today, something what Louis says is like so related to basically using the same language we had with slavery.
Yeah.
Slavery and connected with the same affect and fears and okay. Just as a brief introduction, I would like I have two prints of this text I'm going to read after the listening session. It's a bit like get yourself in a comfortable position. It's like a bit of a thing. It's field recordings I made in the last year. And especially connecting like infrastructures, which I became interested in, which surround like our lives through like energy systems, like wind power plants, the electricity transforming thing, like rural education or uneducation, vernacular terms, not very directly, but I don't know, just like relax, try to listen with your whole body, we also realized that the sound really activates the room. Try to listen to the room and what the sound does to this room. So we transport like different spaces in this room. To beam, radiate, und rauschen, to noise, rush. Begin with sleep. Touch your limbs, feel their skin, but not as yours. Color will come back to the world when you eat, she said. My fingers. I leave out the words now, which shouldn't be in the script, but you can read them. Collapse on me like I love you, but reversed. Sleeping. Through the window, white church tower bright against doom sky. Strahlt in meine Augen. Your eyes hurt from all the scrolling in the night. Thumbs up for someone. Her voice harmonizing with the air siren in Ukraine went viral. IRL, the same sound sirens simultaneously into my bedroom. German E57, 101 decibels on 30 meters. She singing to the possibility of her immediate death in real time. And IRL, the same sound sirens simultaneously into my bedroom. German E57, 101 decibels, on 30 meters, a call for firefighters. Death on the highway. Begin with two sirens. Shh. Who has a bird is split horizontally, in two halves. Human torso, lower body, bird. She who captivates the eye, haunting voice. She who creates the persuasive act, sweet speech. And we know all things that come to pass upon the fruitful earth begin with his body tied down to the masts of the ship, a phallic gesture indeed, fearing the siren's call. His listening has to be repressive. Protect me from what I want, Lord, or face disorientation, cry. To the point of no return, between Greek islands, sharp cliffs. What happens when a space between two things collapses? The poet wonders, the lover explores, the artist needs death as a limit. But you realize that war wants death as horizon, each to everyone on repeat, try and survive the fucking peace. Begin with sitting in your kitchen. They said the thought of eating came to her when she was tired of tears. White calendar against blue wall, titled Abolition is a Love Language, tells me to begin with March 30, 2018. Great March of Return. Peaceful protests at Gaza border every Friday, 1.5 years, the call for return forms the need to arrive. To be able to move or to move back does not address the past. One can be forcibly displaced, but one cannot be forced to disconnect to what happens when the space between two things collapses. Like I love you. And you can call me Province. My pronouns are a hyper-regional act. She, pulsating borders against my skin. Middle class. I feel heterosexual. But when I say heterosexuality, know that I mean the erotics of imbalance. Heterosexuals don't have closets. They just leave their shit strewn about the room, all on display. Hey, I am speaking to you. Can you address me? A world that seems irreparably out of reach, the poet asks. And you obviously say no. And remember when you read this sentence. We are dispossessed by the knowledge of each other's address. Or it's disorienting to know where you are, by Nisha Ramaya. In a meadow, a field, polluted, you are polluted, we pollution, and you polluting, looted, looting, a parody of betrayal. Tinnitus. Can you separate sensation from imagination? Begin with a place where time does not hurt, or put your body where your mouth is, thirst cased down at the edge of her lips. We sleep in a real estate office, spooning and snuggling, simply because it keeps us warm and evacuated from our own fantasy.
Having grown up in this musical household, my dad was a cellist for the Philadelphia Opera Company.
Mm-hmm.
And he would get free tickets for these daytime shows during the week that were part of an education program for the city schools, the public schools in the city, where they would bring kids into the spaces to watch the dress rehearsals.
Mm-hmm.
And because I knew, like, my dad was part of the performance and I could be back in the green room and, like, goofing off
mm-hmm.
after the show, I could also hear all of the performers react to how the kids were behaving in the space,
mm-hmm.
which was so boisterous, and there was talking and there was hooting and hollering and real reactions to funny things that happened, or, like, you know, of course, in tragic opera there's lots of stuff that happens,
yeah.
but the kids would react in these, like, visceral, loud, boisterous ways, and the people who were performing in the opera loved it. They were their favorite performances because they were actually getting something from, like, the call and response, right, that we, you know, sort of were listening to at the beginning. Like, they were getting that response that they needed, that energy that they needed.
Yeah.
So there's also something, I don't know, I keep thinking a lot about the vibration being energy
mm-hmm.
as well. And like you said, like, this idea that we're supposed to go into theater and just sit and watch and then leave makes it the opposite of what it used to be.
Yeah, completely.
Right.
Completely.
And much more similar, to sitting with our phones. Even movies, when I was a kid, movies and television, I always watched with other people.
Mm-hmm.
We never were watching TV on our own, and now we're always watching TV on our own. But I don't know how